to sign off on the closing of the hospital, but it also allows them to sort of rationalize how that care is delivered in the given area, given the demand, given the needs of the area. So again, it's not closing a hospital is not the same thing as closing down all operations in the area, which is what a lot of people think.
Well, I want to thank concerned Veterans for America and Sean Riley in particular for spending a little time with Veterans Radio today. Sure. Sean, how do people follow more of what you're doing and maybe look at more of the policy considerations and recommendations?
So you can go to our website, which is CV, the number 4A.org. That's C as in Charlie, V as in Victor, the number 4, and A as in Alpha. .org. You can check out our plan. It's online. It's in PDF form. You can go to our blog where I write on many of these issues along with several of my colleagues. It's called the Overwatch blog. And feel free to reach out to me. My email is S Riley, S-R-I-E-L-E-Y at CV4A.org. So be glad to answer any questions that anyone had.
Well, we really appreciate this opportunity to spend a little time with you. Listeners, thank you for listening to Veterans Radio. We're going to record a separate podcast with Sean and some additional issues you might want to listen to. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I am a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows at veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed. Bree? Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with veteransradio.net. We're recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. Our guest today is very timely. We're talking to Sean Riley of the Concerned Veterans for America. Sean is a veteran himself. He did 9 years with the Maryland Army National Guard, including tours of duty in Iraq and Guantanamo Bay. He holds a master's degree from St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland, and is currently pursuing his PhD in political theory at the Catholic University of America. But we have him on today because he is the outreach and research analyst for the Concerned Veterans for America, who are engaged in a policy discussion that really is catching the nation's attention about how broken is the VA and is it fixable. Sean, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, you've been involved in veterans issues for a while, including a stint with the American Legion as one of their lobbyists working in veterans benefits areas.
Correct.
But we're here to talk a little bit about the work that Concerned Veterans for America is doing that stems out of the 2014 wait time concerns in veteran hospitals, mm-hmm. and the CHOICE program that Congress put in place to solve some of those problems. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us what's really going on and why Concerned Veterans for America issued its report, Reforming Veterans Healthcare?
Right. So, again, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. 2014, a lot of people know that there was a scandal that was uncovered in spring of 2014, just about 2 years ago, where it was uncovered that at various VA hospitals around the country, there were manipulations of wait times that were going on. Now, this came about because VA had issued directives to keep wait times under a certain time period, and directors and official VA officials were getting bonuses based on their ability to meet those standards. But unfortunately, what was uncovered was that what was discovered was that the executives were incentivized then to manipulate wait times to make it look like they were shorter than they were. The effect of this was that some veterans may have actually died waiting for care. The numbers vary. It depends on who you talk to. Anywhere from maybe around 10 to upwards of 300, depending on whose numbers you believe. But the point is that veterans were being placed on what I call secret wait lists, where they sometimes languish and in some cases died from lack of care. And so this led to the resignation of Secretary Shinseki, who was the Secretary of VA at the time, and a big scandal. In the wake of that, the Conservatives for America assembled a task force that was aiming to look at the state of veterans' health care and to see how it could be fixed. Now, if you notice that the title is not fixing VA, it's fixing veterans' health care, right? So the point here is not how can we save VA. Maybe that's what we'll do, right? Maybe that's a desirable outcome. But the question is not how do we save VA as a bureaucracy. The question is how do we fix healthcare for veterans, the healthcare that they earned from their service. How do we ensure that they get the healthcare that they need in a way that is efficient, a way that is cost effective, but in a way that really meets their needs without having to be, without being put on wait lists or having, waiting inordinate amount of time, so on and so forth. So, after about 6 months of meeting that task force, the report was issued, in February of 2015. Mind you, this whole time I was still, with the American Legion. I didn't come to CVA until, March of 2015.
Listeners, we're talking to Sean Riley, who's an outreach and research analyst for Concerned Veterans for America. When this report came out, Sean, in February of 2015, it's now almost it's over a year later, and it seems to be getting some traction both as to the principles for healthcare reform and the underlying policy recommendations. Maybe you can tell us something about the principles on which the task force issued its report.
Sure. So the number one principle is that the veteran ought to be at the center of any reform proposal. That is, like I said a moment ago, we're not looking at how can we ensure that the VA bureaucracy remains, though that may be desirable, it's not in itself desirable vis-a-vis delivering veterans health care, per se. It may be, it may not be. So that's number one. Veteran must come first and not the VA. Number two is looking at we want to refocus on prioritize veterans with service-connected disabilities. Now, there are many cases in which there is a case that could be made that, all veterans deserve some kind of health care just by virtue of their service. But I don't think anyone disagrees that those who are wounded or injured in the line of duty are those who need to come first in that. So I'm a combat veteran, but I was not wounded, was not injured in the line of duty. I'm what's now called a priority 8. In the VA system. I'm enrolled, but I'm not eligible for any care. So the VA already does something like this, but there is a way in which some feel, and we would probably agree that in some places and some cases, VA has gotten away from its core mission, which is to care first and foremost for those who are combat wounded or have service-connected disabilities. So, we could go through – sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say there are 10 or so principles. One of the more controversial ones might be the one that says veterans should be able to choose where they get their health care.
Right.
That's sort of a loaded question. Why don't you talk about that principle a little bit?
Right. So one of the things that we want to say is that the VA, a little history is in order for here. The VA system was established in the 1920s as a way of dealing with, in many cases, or in a large way, dealing with those who were wounded in World War One. But the important thing to remember is that at that time there was no large scale health infrastructure in the United States. Most healthcare was done by, you know, single local doctors in the small community, and maybe you had a small or medium-sized regional hospital if you're lucky, right? So at that time, there just wasn't the healthcare infrastructure that could have been leveraged to, you know, help assist in the taking care of veterans. But 100 years later now that we are, that is very different. We now have a robust, built-out healthcare system across the United States that is very capable of addressing most healthcare needs. I don't think anyone would disagree that there is there are some things that are unique or specific to veterans, or things that occur more in the veteran population. And so, you know, looking at the possibilities of centers for excellence or things like that is important. But the thing that we want to say is that it should, going back to that first principle, it should revolve around the veteran rather than the VA. The second part to that is, well, if that's true, if that's to happen, then veterans need to be able to have a choice. If VA works for them, if the current system of VA is working for them, if they live close enough, if they're satisfied with the care that they're receiving there, by all means, utilize that. But for the percentage of the veteran population that relies on VA care, but if for whatever reason does not work for them, we say that it makes sense to leverage the now built out integrated healthcare system that exists in the United States. Why not?
Well, one of the other things, Sean, that I thought was interesting in these principles, because certainly that one is pointing out sort of how the public-private healthcare system has changed over 100 years. But another interesting principle that you guys addressed that I had never really thought too much about is how the veterans' demographics are going to change, and this is inevitable. And yeah. And do you take this into account on this for the system of delivering healthcare reform?
Sure.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Right. So this is actually huge. One thing that a lot of people don't think about is that ever since the draft ended in 1973, I believe it was, most Americans do not serve in the military. The vast majority, in fact, less than 1% of the population, the American population, served in these current wars. The current veterans population is something around 22 million, I believe, is the last numbers I remember seeing. Maybe 21 million, somewhere in that range. But over the next 10 to 20 years, that population, as the Vietnam era draftees begin to pass on, that demographic is going to shift, and it's projected over the next 10 to 20 years to go down by some estimates to some 17 million, 15 million, maybe less, maybe even 12 million I've seen. And that's a function of more military technology, right, requires less people. But also in these last wars, most people did multiple tours. Rather than having the draft, the system where you draft, you do a single tour and you're out, We instead sent the same people time and time and time again. So the number of DD-214s that are coming out of that remains relatively stable. Everyone that served in Iraq and Afghanistan was already going to get a DD-214. They had joined, and that was already going to be, whereas all those who served in Vietnam were not. So
your, the point on this one, as I understand it from reading the report fixing VA healthcare, is that you can't continue to build up for a population that's going to get cut by a third or more.
That's it. Exactly. Right.
Got
so
it.
Right. So the thing that we so the important thing to note is that building out these systems. Or rather, these VA full hospitals like is being done in Colorado, just is not going to be tenable over the next 10 to 20 years. These beds are going to sit empty. And in fact, we already have, due to a different kind of demographic shift, which is veterans moving to different parts of the country. We already have in some cases, hospital beds that lie empty in the upper Midwest or in the Northeast, because many of those veterans, having now retired, have moved to places like Florida, Phoenix, Texas. These are places, if you'll note, where they've had problems meeting the needs, they're meeting the demand.
So Sean, one of the points the task force makes is that we have to break the cycle of reform and failure, that you can't continue to put forward minor tweaks to reform the VA Health Administration system. And therefore, one of the policy recommendations that is made here, which I think is probably the most controversial one, although there's a couple others I want to talk about,
sure.
One of the most controversial ones, and we're talking to Sean Riley, who's the outreach coordinator with Concerned Veterans for America, is separating the VA's payer and provider functions into two separate institutions.
Sure.
Could you talk about that for us?
Right. So, excuse me. The proposal basically is that VHA, as it currently exists, would break off the infrastructure portion of VHA would fall under its own separate entity. It would be a government-chartered nonprofit, something along the lines of Amtrak. Now, Amtrak is a kind of a bad example because it is so poorly run. But the important thing to note there is that Amtrak would not be around today, most likely, had it not become a government chartered nonprofit. It was going downhill quickly back in the 60s, when it was made into a government chartered nonprofit. So it's still not managed extremely well, but it's managed better than it was. And our hope is that we could, learn from some of the mistakes that were made there. But essentially what would happen, under our proposal is that the structure, the infrastructure breaks off, becomes under the governance of a government chartered, nonprofit with a board of directors, that's run like the best healthcare organizations in the country, like Cleveland Clinic, like Mayo Clinic, and so forth, where they're called accountable care organizations. They're integrated care organizations, and these are sort of the cutting edge in terms of how healthcare is delivered today. So our vision would be to have veterans have access to their own sort of version of Mayo Clinic that provides them cutting edge healthcare and is a healthcare organization that is owned and funded by the federal government instead of a federal bureaucracy that attempts to do healthcare. We think that a lot of the problem is that you have essentially a bureaucracy that's attempting to do something that bureaucracies are not good at.
That would be the provider side. What
right.
would happen on the payer side?
So on the payer side, what would end up happening is that VHA would be able to contract with private insurance companies allow veterans to purchase coordinated health plans. One of the biggest concerns from VSOs and others about this kind of proposal is the lack of coordination. But what they envision really is that it's a completely vouchered out process where veterans are sort of just handed a card, and they say, you know, hey, good luck, go out into the community. We'll pay for it, whatever, but, you know, you're on your own in terms of coordination. That's not what we envision. What we envision is a network that the VA would use its buying power to contract with health insurance companies that would allow for there to be a networked coordination of care that is provided to the veterans. Now, it is important to note that a couple of things. One, with that, there would be premiums, and there would be small premiums, and there would be that would be support. You know, we have premium support system, so that would be a tiered according to how much help the veterans need. Whether this is means tested or tested in terms of their disability rating. The other thing to note is that there would be co-pays. Now, this is for two reasons. One is that it helps offset the cost, but two is that it encourages veterans to use the infrastructure. So another of the concerns is that veterans will just all run out and leave the system, and that the infrastructure will end up going away, even though they're promised the option of having the infrastructure. So it's built in an incentive to remain in and get your care from the built out infrastructure of the veteran hospital system.
So Sean, let me see if I've got this right. And we're talking to Sean Riley, outreach coordinator for Concerned Veterans of America. Under this proposal, the bricks and mortar VA healthcare system would go into one corporation, nonprofit, and it'd probably get smaller over time. And on the other side, there'd become a new veterans health insurance program where the federal government provided veterans monetary support, if you will, premium support, mm-hmm. to go buy insurance so that if I wanted to, I could go to a private health insurance entity and use my VA or veterans health insurance program there.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So let me ask you this. You know, VA Choice, which started all this back in 2014, mm-hmm. Hasn't worked all that well. How comfortable is everyone that creating a whole new insurance program is going to work very well?
Well, it's not creating an insurance program, new insurance program per se. It functions actually a lot like what the federal employees get, which is basically where the federal government, via OPM, Office of Personnel Management, contracts with private insurance companies to provide insurance, but it uses its buying power to negotiate contracts that are, you know, that provide coordinated care and this sort of thing. So it's not the same thing as we're not proposing that the federal government sort of stand up its own insurance program. It would become a public private partnership in an important sense.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.